Mission and Admissions at Yale School of Management, an interview with Bruce Delmonico, Assistant Dean for Admissions. Hello and welcome. Thanks for joining me for this week's Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get to that delightful instant when you can high-five the person next to you and exclaim, "Yes, I'm in!" And not only in, but in at the best program for you. Let me ask you, which MBA program just revealed that over half its alumni network gives back to the school? Yale SOM. Oh, and that's more than double most schools' giving rate. Which MBA program experienced a 6% increase in applications in 2016 on top of a whopping 25% increase in 2015? Yale SOM. Which MBA program is in the top 10 for average GPA, average GMAT, and overall selectivity and acceptance selectivity index? You guessed it, Yale SOM. And, as it happens, the Admission Straight Talk podcast we did with Bruce Delmonico about Yale SOM is one of our top 5 MBA admissions podcasts. It gives me great pleasure to have back on Admission Straight Talk and to introduce Bruce Delmonico, Assistant Dean for Admissions at Yale School of Management. He has been on the admissions team at Yale since 2004. He became the director in 2006 and Assistant Dean in 2012. It's a pleasure having him here now. Bruce, welcome to Admissions Straight Talk.
Thank you so much, Linda. It's great to be on Admission Straight Talk.
Okay. Glad to have you. Now, yeah. I'm going to refer listeners to your last podcast, which they can find at exhibit.com/77, for an overview of Yale SOM's 2-year full-time MBA program. But I'd like to start this episode with what's new at Yale SOM in terms of its program, job placement, and student life. I'm going to leave admissions for a little bit later.
Sure. Happy to defer on admissions and start with other parts of the program. So there's actually a lot that's been going on in the last 2 years. I don't know if I'll be able to get to everything. I think actually at the time we last had this conversation, we were just starting up our entrepreneurship program, for example. There is one that spans the university, but we have now an entrepreneurship program that resides here at SOM, and it's now 2 years old and has grown exponentially with a dozen or more new course offerings, you know, startup weekends, lots of activity and businesses coming from and other organizations coming from that. So that's been a big change. In addition, our Global Network for Advanced Management, which when we spoke was 3 years old, will be celebrating its fifth anniversary in this coming spring, so we're going to have a big celebration plan for that, and there are lots of opportunities through the GNAM, as we call it, for SOM students to engage globally, and I'd love to, hopefully we'll have a chance to talk more about those global opportunities.
Absolutely.
And our various centers for excellence, as another example, including and especially YCCI, the Yale Center for Customer Insights, has brought a lot of experiential opportunities to the campus, so companies will come to the faculty with projects they want them to work on, companies like Pepsi or Google or IBM, and the faculty will then enlist students to help on those projects. So that's been, especially under the leadership of Jenny Liu, who herself is an SOM alumna. She was in consumer packaged goods and now has returned to be executive director, and she's really done a lot with YCCI, which is great. So those are a few things. I could go on. I don't know if there's more time to add a couple other things.
Yeah, you can add a couple other things. You can add a couple other things. Go ahead.
Sure. And I know you talked about job placement, too. Before then, I'm hoping we can talk a little bit later possibly about our leadership program, because it is undergoing some change in an exciting way.
Yes.
And there have been new courses that are courses being reconfigured in ways that I think will add lots of flexibility and hopefully some great opportunities for students. And we do actually have some new faculty coming on board that we're very excited about. Gal Zauberman, who formally came on board last year but was splitting time between Wharton and us, taking kind of an interim year, and now is fully in New Haven this year. Toby Moskowitz, who is joining us from Chicago Booth, just joined last month, and he's in finance, and he was a Fisher Prize winner as the top economist under 40, and is a very, very well-regarded member of our finance team. So we're excited to have him on board.
Sure.
And then people like Michael Beirut and Jessica Helfand, who are they're of the group Pentagram. They're going to be practice faculty and will be doing work in sort of design and management, and both in as electives and in our integrated core. And actually, more generally, we're excited that our core faculty or our full-time faculty actually is approaching 30% women. So we're really working to diversify the faculty composition, and it seems like that's having great effect so far.
Great.
So a few other things there. In terms of, I think you mentioned job placement. Just quickly, I checked in with Julia Zupko, who's assistant dean for our career development office, just to see where things are. And as you might know, as we're talking now, we're still within that 3-month period after graduation before the numbers are final. So we don't have final numbers for the class of 2016, but she says that we're on pace to be the same, you know, in the same ballpark as last year. So we seem like we're on pace with the past few years, which is good.
Yeah.
The thing that she wanted to, and I asked if there are any trends that she's seeing, her comment is that given the diversity of interest among Yale SOM graduates, you know, every year numbers can fluctuate up or down a little bit, but the thing that she's seeing is in an overarching way is that there's a lot of unique opportunities. What she told me is that for the class of 2015, obviously the class of 2016 isn't set yet, you know, 130 different companies hired SOM graduates. You know, of a class that's about 325, you know, that's pretty broad. And those numbers turn over, the top 10 hirers, she said, turn over about 50% year over year. So there's a lot of you know, different companies coming. She said more companies are coming every year, which is a positive trend. But the thing that I think for SOM students that's key is that our career development office is very adept at sourcing opportunities in a range of areas because there is so much turnover, there is so much diversity of interest on the student side and then on the recruiter side. So I think that's what she wanted me to highlight, at least, or what she highlighted to me.
That's great. Thank you. Now,
sure.
Yale SOM's mission is to educate leaders for business and society. In preparing for today's podcast, I watched Dean Snyder's video about Yale's mission and how it goes about achieving that mission. And there were three key elements. One, the School of Management's connection to its home university, Yale University. Two, the fact that it's distinctively global, which I know you want to comment on. And three, mm-hmm. that it wants to be the best source of leaders. So I know you wanted to talk about two of those elements, you know, from your first response to my questions. But practically, what does this all mean to students at Yale SOM? And let's start with a leadership training.
Yeah, so we really start with the third one. So the integration with Yale's one, the distinctively global is the second, and then that leadership piece. And
Well,
I think what we talk about is educating elevated leaders for all sectors and regions. So really thinking about how our graduates can lead regardless of, you know, physically what region they're in, and also across sectors. So not just the private sector, but the nonprofit and the public sectors as well. And a lot of that speaks to our integrated curriculum, which, as you probably know, and I'm sure we talked about 2 years ago, is oriented differently than what you would experience at other business schools. So it dispenses with those, you know, functionally discrete siloed courses like marketing and finance, and reorients the material according to stakeholder perspectives. So we call them our organizational perspectives courses, and that's what you experience in the core. The idea is it's much more interdisciplinary, and it helps our students see across different functions, different disciplines, even, you know, across industries, and to see how the sectors are interact and are interrelated. So that's part of it. In terms of the leadership training we do, and I did hint at this in my first answer, our leadership training is evolving. So we, I think, are somewhat distinctive in that we require leadership training throughout your 2 years here at SOM. So it's not a single course, it's not a one-year course, but you need to engage, and there's a requirement to engage in leadership studies throughout your 2 years. What's going to be different this upcoming year is that there will be more flexibility to that, and some of the courses are being aligned and I think reoriented themselves. So for example, when you come to SOM as a student, one of the first courses you take is managing groups and teams, and that sort of starts you on your leadership training. The last course in the course called the executive, so it's kind of scaling up. We actually are trying to, and I don't know if Dean Snyder talked about this in the segment you watched, but really organizing our leadership training and really the training generally along four different dimensions. So starting with the individual, team, organization, and global perspectives, and having students really practice and their leadership training in each of those four areas, and sort of scaling up from individual to the global perspective. Mm-hmm. So in the first year, I mentioned managing groups and teams and the executive. Some of the courses in the leadership track will be sort of rationalized. So there's a new course. We used to have two courses called Leadership Fundamentals and Advanced Leadership. Those are being consolidated into a course called Power and Politics that are taught by Professors Michael Krauss and Heidi Brooks. Heidi Brooks actually, coincidentally, just fun fact, was a college classmate of mine, so it's good to have her on the faculty here. But they're both in the Organizational Behavior Group, and they're going to be teaching that core course in the first year. And then the other big change beyond sort of the rationalizing those first-year courses is in the second year, instead of having sort of lockstep curriculum, which is what we had in the past, now we have a menu of electives that you can choose from to satisfy your leadership requirement in the second year. So it creates more flexibility, it gives you more options, and you can sort of tailor your second-year leadership coursework to really focus on the areas you're interested in, as opposed to just having the same courses. So that's a little bit about the leadership piece.
What are some of the items on the menu for the second-year students?
Sure. So there are, I think, about a dozen courses. We have had, and the course that was required was called Leadership Practicum, and that still exists. So it's one of the options, but it's not the required option. Other courses, for example, are Strategic Management of Nonprofits, Human Capital Strategy, Strategic Leadership Across Sectors, Non-Market Strategy, what else? Managing Global Catastrophes. Fun. So those are the kinds of courses you can take to satisfy. That last one sounds a little dire, but
yes.
those are the kinds of courses you can take.
Okay, so there really is some differentiating going on there. Now let's go to the next of Dean Snyder's triad there. Obviously, Yale University is one of the preeminent universities in the world. How is Yale School of Management taking advantage of its connection to the greater university?
Sure, and that is something that, as you say, is one of the sort of three objectives, and something that I think Yale SOM has always been well integrated. You know, the Yale University itself is a very open place. It's very, you know, across schools and even between the graduate and professional schools and Yale College. But Dean Snyder's really wanted to emphasize deepening those connections. And some of those connections and some of the integration is very straightforward. So as a student, when you take electives here at SOM and you start to take them in the spring of your first year and then your entire second year is all electives, you can take them anywhere at Yale without limit. And so we have close to 70% of our students take at least one elective outside of SOM, and there are some who take two, three, as many as eight different electives outside of SOM. I think the highest number I've seen. But it really allows you to, again, tailor your education and also really, I think, to deepen your education. The idea is that it's not just, you know, a differentiator for the sake of differentiating, you know, the integration with Yale, but the idea is that the world is increasingly complex and interconnected. You need to have, as a leader, you need to have a better sense of not just business concepts, but how those concepts relate to things like politics and law and, you know, environmental issues, sustainability, public health. And so being able to take courses at those other schools will give you a deeper and richer understanding of those issues, which will make you a better leader. So that's the curricular component is one. And about 15% of our students actually pursue a joint degree with another Yale school, a formal mm-hmm. joint degree. So that's a very high percentage. The flip side of that is we do have students from other parts of the university taking classes at SOM. And I think the last count I saw was, I think 1,200 students from outside SOM at Yale took classes at SOM last year. So it was a real open exchange, a real free flow of students. And then the outside the classroom, that connectivity, you know, extends to, for example, conferences that students organize, you know, as, for example, our healthcare conference that SOM students organize. They work with public health students and medical school students and nursing school students. There are clubs that span the university. So I mentioned entrepreneurship earlier, YEI, the Yale Entrepreneurial Institute, which is the university-wide entrepreneurship center. You know, that draws people from not just from SOM, but from engineering and law and medicine and Yale College. So there's a new Stephen Schwartzman, the head of Blackstone, gave money for a new center here at Yale that will try and be a student center for the entire university and really pull students. And hopefully that will be a physical manifestation of that concept of sort of one Yale, as we like to call it, and there's the openness that exists across the school. So those are some things that, some ways in which we try to connect. And I guess one last thing I would mention is that we do, that connection does continue in your life as an alumnus or alumna. So the alumni networks of SOM and the larger Yale Association of Alumni are very well integrated, and a lot of the specific city chapters will have joint events, they have joint boards, so there are lots of ways to connect not just with SOM alumni, but Yale College and law school and medical school and other alumni even after you graduate here at SOM.
Right. Now, from what I recall from our conversation 2 years ago, or maybe earlier conversations, previously Yale SOM students could take electives outside SOM only in the second year. Was it always any elective could be outside of SOM? Is that a broadening of that connection, or am I just not remembering correctly?
You mean the fact that it can be in the spring of the first year too?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I think as far as I can recall, that has always been the case, but that might be new as of the integrated curriculum, which is about started in 2006. So it might be predate our last conversation, but it I don't know that it existed
right all
the way back in, you know, in history.
Yeah. But regardless, clearly there's a lot of opportunity to customize the curriculum to exactly what you need or want.
Right. No, I think that's right. You know, an example, not to belabor, and I know you have other questions. You know, one example, just to sort of make it a little bit more concrete, you know, one example I often give is if, as a student, you're interested in going to real estate finance, there are obviously a lot of classes here in that area here at SOM, but you can also take sustainable development classes at the School of Forestry and Environmental Sciences. You can take real estate law classes at the law school. You can even take, you know, classes in the architecture school, and all those I think would make you more effective after you graduate than if you're just taking business classes here at SOM.
That's a great example. And the last leg of Dean Snyder's triad was global, distinctively global. In real terms, what does that mean at Yale SOM? And I know it means
sure.
a network, but go, you know, that network's part of it.
Network's part of it. Actually, sort of that global reach predates the network. You know, I've mentioned the integrated curriculum that came out in 2006, so it's about 10 years old now. At the time that integrated curriculum rolled out, it included a required international experience trip, and I think we were the first top business school that had mandatory international trip as part of the core curriculum. And that continues. And so we still have those international experience trips. They're not mandatory anymore. Again, like the leadership program where we went from having a single secondary opportunity now to a menu, now we have a menu of global experiences, global opportunities that exist for students. So there is a requirement that before you graduate that you do take part in some global experience, but it doesn't have to be the international experience trip. And in fact, a lot of them, those opportunities exist through the Global Network for Advanced Management. So what that means for students is that there are lots of opportunities. And how I think that's different, we do talk about being distinctively global. What we mean by distinctively is that the opportunities that exist here are different than what you might have at other U.S. business schools. And that's so because especially because of the global network, is really a network model. And what that is, it's a network of 28 now top schools from around the globe that work to offer opportunities for their students collectively in ways I think are much different than the typical model by which U.S. business schools will reach outside the U.S., which is to have a one-to-one partnership. It might be a semester-long exchange or something similar. And those opportunities are actually, frankly, often are at the executive MBA level as opposed to the full-time MBA level. Mm-hmm. But even at the full-time MBA level, it's usually very sort of limited offerings, and they tend to be at a particular other school. What's different about the global network is that through these 28 schools, the network has put together what we call Global Network Weeks, which are opportunities for us during the fall and spring break, so they don't disrupt classes, they don't conflict with classes, but you can, as a student, you can travel to one of the other Global Network schools, learn from the faculty there, but the other participating schools will all be sending their students there as well. So you're learning, as an example, if you went to Koç University in Turkey to study there, and the last Global Network Week had, I think, 17 participating schools.
Wow.
There might be students from those other 17 or 16 of those 17 schools who are attending with you. So you're learning not just in a particular country from that faculty with those students, but with students from around the globe. So it really amplifies and the opportunities that exist and the connections you can make across the various network schools. And there are other opportunities that exist through the Global Network as well. So those Global Network Weeks are one. We also have Global Network online courses, which are, as the name suggests, these are virtual courses that you take with students from the other Global Network schools that are satisfy this global studies requirement and are I think allow you to again see how students from other countries are understanding and approaching various business problems, but also it gives you opportunities to learn how to interact virtually because you are doing projects with them and in a virtual setting. That reminds me of another change to the program that I didn't mention earlier. We, as part of the first year core, we have a new class called Global Virtual Teams, which is rather very ambitious, and it's part of the sort of the teams part of the training that really gives students opportunities to learn not just how to be a team member when you are physically with the other members of your team, but how to work virtually across time zones and across geographies, which is increasingly, we see, something that students are coming in with, but also that they're very much needing after they graduate. So that's, we have a course dedicated to that kind of interaction, global virtual teams.
Sure.
Just as an aside. I don't want to belabor it, but on the global front, there are a few other opportunities that exist. We have courses, social entrepreneurship courses, for example, that will take students to India and elsewhere to do consulting projects, and this is something that's done for credit and is really one of those sort of practical opportunities, experiential opportunities that you get to practice what you are you're learning and have an impact on a consulting basis with social entrepreneurs around the globe. And then we do have a semester-long exchange, so there are lots of opportunities to get that global exposure here at SOM.
I think the global network where you can take classes actually virtually, but actually from a foreign university while residing still in New Haven and with students at that other university, I think that is unique to Yale at this point in time.
It is very unique to Yale. The only other U.S. school, there are 28 global network schools. The last school that was admitted into the global network was actually Berkeley Haas. So that was a big step to say we were going to have another U.S. school. But so those are the two, one on each coast, and then the other global network schools are scattered around the globe. And they are, the idea behind the network is to have some schools that are in developed countries where business currently operates, and then have some in developing countries where business will operate, to have a sense of not just where things are now, but where they're going. One last thing I would mention on the global network and those global opportunities, too, as I said, that we have a requirement that students do do fulfill their global studies requirement through one of these various opportunities. When you join SOM, you actually are given a global studies account, which is several thousand dollars to cover the expenses of taking on one of these opportunities. So the account will cover the expenses for one international experience trip or two global network weeks. So I think that's a benefit that people don't always know about or appreciate until they actually arrive here at SOM.
That's great to know. Thank you. Now, sure. Yale SOM has managed to increase the percentage of alumni giving to over 51.9%, almost 52% in 2015-16, and that's up from 41% in 2013, 41.7% in 2013 per a recent Poets and Quants article that I read. And that's well above most competitor schools' rates, which hover around 25%. To what do you attribute that very real tribute from your alumni?
Yeah, so that was a big achievement this year. We were over 50% last year, and we actually went up this year at a time when a lot of schools are seeing a decline in their giving rates. I mean, at a very practical level, you know, attribute it to the great work of the development team. They really worked hard to make sure that the participation rate was high. I think
I'm gonna bet that the other universities also have development teams.
Yes, yes. I think the bigger message, though, I think that's right. And the bigger message, I would also, as an aside, so we were over 50% giving, and the total giving was over $50 million this year.
Fantastic.
Which Dean Snyder has made the point that there are other schools that have been over 50% giving, other schools that have received more than $50 million at various points, but he's unaware, and I don't know if any of us are aware, that any school that's done that in the same year to be over the, we're calling it the 50-50 club.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there has been, but we feel as though that's pretty unique. And I think it is, beyond the work of the development team, I think it really is speaks to the level of engagement of the alumni. And I think more than that, obviously we were at a little over 40% just a few years ago. That increase, I think, reflects the momentum of the school and the sense among the alumni that the school is doing a lot of good things and is really on a bit of a roll. And I think that they're very willing to help contribute to the continued momentum of the school.
Okay, great. Now, I think it's fine to pay tribute to the development team, but I don't think it's all the development team. Now, Yale has this year, let's turn to the application. Yale has this year a new essay question, and it's actually a fairly unusual one. And the question is, describe the biggest commitment you ever made, and it has a 500-word maximum. Why the change to this question? So why the change and why this question?
Right. Well, the change, we actually, our previous question, which focused on impact, we had for 2 years, and we liked the question, actually, which is why we had kept it. We didn't, so then we probably would have been open to keeping that question. So we didn't change just for the sake of changing. I think a lot of times schools just change our questions just to, just for the fun of it, it seems like, and they feel like they need to sort of freshen things up. But I think this particular question we asked specifically, because we wanted get a sense of how you think about commitment, because that's an important thing. You will, to be successful here, to be successful after graduation, you need to be someone who makes commitments, honors commitments, and really is willing to give of yourself to fulfill commitments. And so we wanted to get a sense of how you think about that. And I think I did a blog post after we announced the essay question. I mentioned that Amy Wersniewski, who's one of our organizational behavior faculty members, helped us develop this question. And she and others are actually, we work with the faculty very closely in a number of fronts to try and to develop our, not just the application, but also how we're looking at elements of the application. And so she's been very helpful on this and other fronts, as have other members of the faculty. But I think she was very instrumental in really having us focus on commitment, because that was something where we felt like that's where people can differentiate themselves and where we can get information about a trait that we feel is meaningful in terms of your SOM success and then your future success.
Right. And look, I think a fundamental of leadership is making commitments and following through on them. So mm-hmm. if that's your mission, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah. And I would say, too, not to get too much into sort of the application advice, you know, in making the question...
Go ahead.
Since people probably do, who are listening probably do care about the application piece, might be somewhat tangentially related to why they're listening. In looking at the responses, I mean, obviously our first deadline hasn't hit yet at the time we're talking, but the way we're approaching it is we're not looking to make value judgments about what kind of commitment you choose. You mean there might be some extreme cases where, you know, if the commitment, you say my commitment is committed to watching every episode of Game of Thrones, that might not be a very significant commitment, and that might say something about you.
Judgment.
Exactly. But it's not about are making value judgments. It's more about understanding how you demonstrate the commitment and what activities you undertook to fulfill that commitment. So it's more about the actions than about the what the thing you're committing to is.
Okay. Well, that's very good to know. And it makes sense to me. If you're assuming one of the things you're trying to assess here would be leadership.
Right.
Okay. Again, the ability to make a commitment, follow through on it, assume responsibility perhaps for an outcome mm-hmm. or an attempt, so that all makes sense, given Yale's mission.
Right.
Now, one of the fairly recent additions to the Yale SOM application, and it might already have been a requirement 2 years ago, you would know that better than I would, but it is the video essay. How has it helped you in evaluating applications, and how is it changing this year?
Yeah, so we have, I think it was in place when we spoke last year. I think we've been experimenting with the video questions for five or so years at this point. Mm-hmm. This will be probably our fourth full season where we've, I think fourth is right, where we've, it's been a requirement for everybody who applies. It's helped, at a very core level, it helps us evaluate English language skills.
Sure.
So when we introduced the video question component of the application, we simultaneously dropped the English language test, so we don't require a TOEFL or an IELTS. And that was, those went hand in hand. We added video mm-hmm. questions and we eliminated the other requirement. We felt that was hopefully a win-win, and it helped us evaluate more effectively and also was less of a burden on applicants that they didn't have to go through this other cumbersome test.
Yeah.
So that's sort of a core. Beyond that, it really does help us get more of a three-dimensional sense of an applicant. You get some sense, applications, as you well know better than anybody, the application process is inherently artificial. You see mm-hmm. very thin slices of an individual through the process. And especially the paper submission, you're only seeing a very few data points. And so the video questions we felt gave us that much more of a perspective on a candidate. You're able to, we used to say the essay is where the candidate can speak to us, and now we have the video question where you can literally speak to us, and we can get a sense of how well, you think and speak on your feet. Some of our questions are oriented in that direction. Your English language skills, your sort of presentation skills, all those things that add another dimension to your candidacy. And when we find that, by and large, the video questions, and again, we approach them with hopefully the right perspective, which is these are, 3 or 4 minutes of you speaking to us. They are not going to outweigh your professional background, your academic record, things that you've developed over extended periods of time. So these aren't the primary drivers of decisions, but they give us just a little bit added insight into a candidate. And we tend to approach them not as something that would be disqualifying, but sometimes something that maybe would cause us to pay closer attention to a candidate who might not otherwise sort of jump out based on the sort of their paper application. So that's a little bit about it. In terms of, I think the second half was how is it changing this year?
Yeah.
We're not making dramatic changes this year. There are three questions. And for those who don't know, what happens is after you submit your application and pay the fee, you get the link to the video questions, which is a platform that allows you to use your webcam to record live, you know, real-time responses to questions that we have recorded and will post to you, and then those are recorded and stored, and then we will view them later. So they're asynchronous, as it were. You record them. We've recorded our questions ahead of time. You record your answer, and then we review them later on. But there are three questions. The first one has to do with leadership, not surprisingly, and we ask about how you approach leadership in more of a sort of a higher level way. The second question is still a behavioral question where we will ask about a past incident or a past experience of yours and ask you to sort of talk about that and sort of what you learned from that. Those are the types of questions you normally will see in a job interview or an MBA admissions interview. And then the third question is what we call our thought question, where we will give you a statement that presents a position, presents a conclusion, and ask you whether you agree or disagree with it and why. And that's where we get a little bit more of a sense of, you know, how you like to think on your feet. And much like the essay question, it's not that we don't care whether you agree or disagree, but it's more about how you think through your answer that we care about.
All right. And if I recall, applicants can practice before they do the real thing, right? They get a question.
They can.
Yeah.
They can. You can test your connection, and then there are sample questions, and you can do as many as you want. I think we have 10 or so, so you can do all 10 if you want, just to practice the platform and the format. I think the most disconcerting thing for people, it's sort of like Skype, but instead of having someone else talking to you,
yeah,
you see your own picture in the corner, and I think that's the thing that people find a little bit disorienting. But so getting used to that aspect of it, I think, is probably the main thing.
I agree with you. I used to do videos where I would record myself. There was nobody else on the other end, and I would look at myself, and I felt I was just coming across as so stern, no affect, no smile. I was not at all happy with them. And then somebody started doing it with me, and suddenly I had somebody either smiling back at me or encouraging me or whatever. And I thought my videos suddenly improved quite a bit.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. You don't have that feedback that you would get in a sort of
conversation.
A conversation, exactly. And I have to say, the pieces of feedback we get from applicants is that no one feels as though they did as well as they thought they did. But everyone that I talk to, at least, they find it to be stressful going in, but actually a large number of people actually find that they enjoy it after it's over, that they actually enjoyed it more than they thought they would. And the only thing I would say is that we understand that these are extemporaneous, that you're speaking in the moment, and so we're not expecting perfection. And I think if people approach, you know, if candidates approach it with the idea of just relaxing and having fun with it, I think that goes a long way, because it isn't, you don't have to have crafted the perfect response. And in fact, some of the more impressive things are for us are times when something goes wrong. We have lots of videos of roommates or coworkers barging in on people while they're recording, or something falls over, and you know, it's almost as important how well you recover from that,
sure,
than the fact that it happened in the first place.
Oh yeah, because that's life.
Exactly.
That's life. You're in control of your reaction to events, not always the events themselves.
Exactly.
So that's a real life test, but. Yeah, one thing I used to do is I used to pin a smiley face to the camera. So, you know, tape a smiley face to the camera to remind me to smile. Because otherwise I just felt I came across as so stern and almost mean looking. It wasn't quite the impression I wanted to make. But
I've heard of people who somewhat similarly have posted a picture of someone else where their picture is, so that they're not looking at themselves, but at least they feel like they're looking at someone else. So it's more of a conversation as opposed to staring at themselves.
That's a good idea too. That is a good idea. All right, let's move on. What is the worst advice you ever seen or heard given to MBA applicants? I'm sure you've heard it. I'm sure you've heard something that you leave that. Yeah. Oh my goodness, how could someone? Hopefully,
you know, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know that I've actually heard or seen this advice being given. I'm trying to think, given live, but I feel like in reviewing applications, we see the results of that advice.
Okay.
So maybe if I can sort of approach it from that perspective.
Go ahead.
I'm just trying to sort of, you know, doing some sleuthing and figuring out what someone
where
might have said
from
to cause this person to, you know, approach the application that way.
Yeah.
And I think for us, this is very Yale SOM specific, although I imagine there might be analogous advice that others are receiving for applying to other schools. But there are times when we see applicants who it seems have really clearly tried to orient, have some sort of nonprofit angle to their application because they feel as though we're the nonprofit school.
Yeah.
And they need to somehow get in there that they are a nonprofit person, whether it's in terms of, you know, what they're doing now or what they want to do. And it really doesn't fit with the rest of their profile. And whether someone else told them that or they thought this on their own, that they needed to have some sort of nonprofit piece to their application, it for us, it definitely rings hollow. And it doesn't, you know, what I say is it doesn't mean that we will necessarily not accept them. Sometimes they're very strong and we will take them, but it's not because of the nonprofit piece. It's almost in spite of it. And I think that's my sense is that's how some people approach other schools too. They feel as though school X is known for this particular area, therefore I also have to be interested in this particular area, without realizing that all the top schools have a real broad diversity of students, and we're looking to bring a mixture of backgrounds and profiles and professional interests into the school. And so it's not that you have to have expressed interest or demonstrated interest in any one particular area to be successful.
Right. I think it kind of goes back to, tell the schools what you want them to know, what you think, not what you think they want to hear. So with Yale SOM, they may think that you want to hear about not-for-profit interests.
Mm-hmm.
And they're telling you what they think you want to hear as opposed to what they should want you to know.
Yep.
And I think that's probably one of the most common mistakes applicants make.
Yeah, well, I think that's right. You probably see it quite a bit. But it is, and it can be sometimes, you know, pretty dramatic. So we might see someone who, you know, was an economics or business major undergrad. They're in finance now. And then all of a sudden they say, you know, I want to go start a nonprofit. And you're like, where is this coming from? And it comes from nowhere. And it definitely, you know, we're not looking for people to have this sort of linear progression and know exactly, you know, have what they've done in the past line up exactly to where they're going in the future. A lot of times, you know, the vast majority of people are coming to business school, especially two-year full-time programs, are looking to make some sort of pivot. But there has to be some connection, and it can't come out of left field. And I think you're right that that's the overarching theme is, you know, people telling us what they think we want to hear. That's where people, the application looks misaligned and the pieces don't necessarily fit together the way they should.
Right. That makes sense. And what advice do you have for applicants sitting to fill out their Yale School of Management application?
So I guess this would be kind of the inverse converse.
Reverse.
I guess I need a thesaurus to know which is right. I've been so far since I've had to do my SAT words. Of the last piece of advice, which is what I always tell people is don't overthink it. I think people get so tripped up in their own sort of game theory approach that, you know, what are they looking for? And let me back that out and figure out what then I need to present to them, as opposed to just presenting themselves. I think our application certainly, I don't feel, is overly complicated. I think it's pretty straightforward. We want it to be straightforward. We don't want to be making decisions on people based on who was more adept at filling out the application. We want to make decisions based on who the strongest candidates are. And I think a lot of other schools are approach it the same way. So mm-hmm. I think when people start to just get caught up in how every little piece is going to play, I think that, and kind of just going to get bogged down and overthink it, I think that's where they can get into trouble. So I just tell people, keep it simple, have fun with it, and don't overthink the process.
And this is the last question. What would you have liked me to ask you?
What would I like you to ask me? Oh, my gosh. I don't know. It was a pretty thorough conversation.
Okay.
Yeah, you did a great job.
Thank you. All right. Well, Bruce, thank you so much for joining me today. Where can listeners and potential applicants learn more about Yale SOM's MBA program?
Sure. They can go to som.yale.edu and learn all about the program and engage with us on any number of different ways. So hopefully you'll take the opportunity to do that.
Okay, we'll include links in the show notes at exhibit.com/169169 to som.yale.edu, just as Bruce mentioned it, as well as to related articles and show notes. Listener, thank you too for joining Bruce Delmonico and me for this, our 169th episode. If you find the show worthwhile, please share the good word by leaving a review on iTunes. Your doing so helps us spread the news about Admission Straight Talk, especially if you leave a 5-star review. So if you think AST deserves those 5 shiny stars, please let iTunes know. There's a link in our show notes to our iTunes page where you can leave that review. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.